Hello, Gogo.
Is that Porter?
Porter's here.
U luistert naar Trent Radio 92.7 FM in Peterborough. Goeiedag. U luistert naar Trent Radio 92.7 FM in Peterborough.
I don't know, but this still does not answer my question as to what is monogamy. I will try to answer, and as I was the one who posed the question, it should not be very difficult for me to find one, should it? What is monogamy but the removal of the joy of anticipation, and thereby the removal of insecurity? What is monogamy but this? Whatever is a process of repetition is monogamy. Is monogamy a process then of repetition? This is another question I have asked. It is only right that I answer it for you. What is repetition? I ask again, what is repetition? What is it? Is it an extension of dimensions, a destruction of boundaries? It is only just that I answer these questions, as I am the one who has posed them. But first I should tell you what Gertrude Stein has said about repetition. Having read a lot of Gertrude Stein, I should tell you what she says about repetition, shouldn't I? And as I am the one who has just asked this question, it is only right that I should answer it. This is, of course, should not be very difficult, as I am the one who has asked the question. Stein says, repetition, there is no repetition. There is no such thing as repetition. What is a repetition but an increase in insistence, an increase in pressure, whether it is visual pressure, or tactual pressure, or emotive pressure, it is an increase in insistence, not repetition. As I reach the bottom of this page, making my first typing error, I have no desire to amend and pretend I did not make it. As I reach the bottom, I should repeat, repetition is not really repetition, but insistence. What has this to do with monotony? As I am the one who has just asked this question, I feel it is only right that I should answer it. After all, it should not be difficult to do so, as I am the one who has just asked this question. If monotony is the removal, but there you see, I've scattered on a hypothetical, which is not really very good. I'll try, whoops, there goes my first piece of punctuation. Monotony, I put it to you, is the removal of the joy of anticipation. Although I personally find little joy in anticipating, monotony is the removal of...
The enrichment always appears as the gang leader of his own self. Giving his unconscious orders to call their conscience. His eyes shining with satisfaction, speaking to many that he himself is. Once he wants to discuss the cause of the threat. If
about to say could be monotonous, but what is monotonous? What I am about to say is most monotonous. I don't know, but this book does not answer my question as to what is monotonous. I will try to answer, because I was the one who posed the question. It should not be very difficult for me to find one. What is monotonous? For the people of enjoy of anticipation, and thereby the people of insecurity. What is monotonous but this? Whatever is the process of repetition is monotonous. Monotonous is the process then of repetition. This is not a question I have asked. It is only right that I answer for you. What is repetition? I ask again, what is repetition? What is it? Is it an extension of dynamics? A destruction of boundaries? It is only just that I answer these questions, as I am the one who has posed them. The person who tells you what Wittgenstein has said about repetition. I've spread a lot of Wittgenstein, I can tell you what he says about repetition to you guys. And as I am the one who has just asked this question, it is only right that I should answer it. This is, of course, it should not be very difficult. As I am the one who has asked the question, Stein says, repetition, there is no repetition. There is no such thing as repetition. What is a repetition but an increase in resistance, an increase in pressure, whether it is visual pressure, or tactile pressure, or emotive pressure, it is an increase in insistence, not repetition. As I reach the bottom of this page, making my first typing error, I have no desire to amend and pretend I did not make it. As I reach the bottom, I should repeat repetition, it's not really repetition, but insistence. What has it to do with monotony?
As I am the one who has appears as a gang leader of his own self.
After all, it's not really difficult to do so.
As I am the one who has to do with conscience.
Monotony is the removal of the
His eyes shining in satisfaction and speaking to many that he himself is the most.
But I'm
going to in this sense, more than any other. The proposition is true! Most individual is the most general. 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 Most individual is the most general.
Right that I answer it for you. What is repetition? I ask again, what is repetition? What is it? Is it an extension of dimensions, a destruction of boundaries? It is only just that I answer these questions, as I am the one who has posed them. But first I should tell you what Wittgenstein has said about repetition. Having read a lot of Wittgenstein, I should tell you what he says about repetition to you guys. And as I am the one who has just asked this question, it is only right that I should answer it. This is, of course, not very difficult, as I am the one who has asked the question. Stein says, repetition, there is no repetition. There is no such thing as repetition. What is a repetition but an increase in resistance, an increase in pressure, whether it is visual pressure, or tactile pressure, or emotive pressure, it is an increase in resistance, not repetition. As I reach the bottom of this page, it makes me
Thank you. Hello there, girls and boys, and those in between. This is Web Madman and Pilot K9 here for another week of Art Space, Noise Space. We're starting a little late. I was having a hard time reaching escape velocity this morning. but now that we're here, we have some great news about a performance tonight at Art Space by Lillian Allen. And that starts at 7 o'clock, and it will have performances by The Mad Poet and Chet Zing, and with dub mixing by Jarrett Prescott.
Looking forward to this.
Yeah, ditto. But that means walking home and then all the way down there. God.
It's going to be cold tonight.
It is. No, today is very deceptive out there. It feels like it should be warm, but it's not. Yeah, there's that chilly breeze. But on another news front, Full Metal Booty played last night at the Market Hall.
That was a lot of fun.
That was. And the Food Nut Bombs, the musical, was a little rough and raw around the edges, but...
Well, it was one of those anarcho-punk activist things.
Yeah.
With zero budget.
Yep.
And gleeful participation... By all
that participated, yes, no, and I think in cases like that, it's also about the point that they're making, which is that the power lies with the individuals that aren't big.
Right.
The beauty in the small. Yeah,
but there's more of us than there are of them.
That's right. And I've been really sort of working with the concept of the long tail these days. Which
the
is
what?
The long tail, which is something that I first read about in Wired magazine.
Of all places.
And it was back, I guess it was around 2000, 2001. And it was talking about, and what it's evolved into talking about is instances like YouTube, where you have the large head, which is kind of like the more quote-unquote mainstream stuff, which is, you know, uploads of syndicated television and those sorts of things. And
Sometimes I don't understand why people bother to do that.
I know, but that's the head, and
right.
And it looks like the big, but when you look at the what they call the long tail, which is all the user created content, the specialized things, and you know, those the specialized content where, you know, you and maybe a dozen other people are maybe looking at it,
but there's lots and
there's lots and that's the long tail. And there's, you know, they're estimating that the long tail is by far larger than the head. But the head is the most visible.
Yeah.
Right? And so I see that in the mediascape with, you know, what we, and, more recently I was reading an article where a guy was referring to, the mainstream as, a niche. And how it's, it is all niche marketing. It's just
right.
The size of the niche. And what we refer to as mainstream is a shrinking niche.
It's about time.
Yeah. And but it's the reason that we have all of the large media companies kind of freaking out.
They're running scared.
Yes, yeah. And they're just trying to sue everything that moves in order to try and reestablish themselves. Because I really see it as a really clear example of the artificial scarcity of neocapitalism.
Explain.
Explain that. Well, the artificial scarcity is basically the crux of it is every time somebody looks at something in a modern age, it always gets reduced to the dollar value. And that dollar value enables the supply to be controlled. So in neo-capitalism, you create a demand and control the supply. And that's the essential scarcity model.
Right.
And the thing that it doesn't deal with very well is where there's plenty. It doesn't deal with abundance. It doesn't know how. And sees it as a threat. And that's partly what's going on now.
It's not just abundance, but it's the lack of centralized control.
That's
it's
right.
The lack of their own control over
that's
it.
Right, yeah. And that's the scarcity mechanism, as I've been, like, I've been seeing it more and more, that in that kind of framework, that it's a mechanism that just creates scarcity as its primary goal. And also, and this is a very, you know, class analysis sort of take, is that it creates barriers divides people into the have-nots and all of that sort of nonsense.
Right, and it also ensures that the have-nots will actually want to be
the that's haves. Right, that's right, right.
Rather than doing their own thing, they want to buy into something that's already
large
presented to them.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's this, you know, kind of lowest common denominator path of least resistance kind of thing created, and again, it's something that the current internet sort of flies in the face of, because it's with the internet, it's all about choice. It's all about you push the button. You're the one that chooses where you're going to go.
Yeah, but the internet is getting more and more uptight. And controlled by fewer and fewer companies.
Sort of,
not controlled, but yeah. Patrolled, maybe. Is
right. And this is, again, the head and tail, right?
Right.
Where the head is being more and more controlled, right? So, you know, as I mentioned, YouTube, right, is now owned by Google, right? So it's, you know, this, again, this kind of amalgamating, centralizing of control.
Pretty soon it's all going to be AOL, Time Warner, Disney.
Well, that's the flip side of it, is that these things sort of blip and then falter. And I'm already starting to see this, where there is like dozens, well, probably hundreds by now, of other video sharing sites that are starting to come up, because people are less and less interested in YouTube.
It has fewer possibilities than it did when it started.
That's right. Yeah. And more and more people they're not liking going with the big thing, right? There's more and more people seeking out the stuff that's, as I say, in the long tail. Because it's more appealing, in that it's more, personal.
Right.
And, well...
I was thinking of a critique I read.
Yeah.
Some guy, I can't remember his name, mm-hmm. but he was complaining that stuff like YouTube
mm-hmm.
Is destroying the standards of culture.
Right.
Because it lets people make their own culture instead.
That's right.
And, you know, this starts with the assumption that mainstream culture is good to
right.
begin with.
Yeah, yeah. The status quo,
which
maintain
is
that.
Questionable, to say the least.
Yeah, yeah. And then that actually, in some ways, is really in 19th century kind of perspective of trying to keep things as they are because they're supposed to be this way, and just thinking about it in terms of like postmodern theory and the elimination of the center. And that's what those people are trying to defend, is the center, right? They feel like that's what gives them meaning, that's what gives them purpose. And by challenging it, they feel that as a direct kind of aim at their own sense of self and identity and all those sorts of things.
Security.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a security in the familiar and the...
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Don't paint outside of those lines. It's scary out there.
It's cold.
It's cold. Yeah. Actually, I just... the Pirate Bay, who are on trial right now.
Does that mean you can't download from them anymore?
Oh, no. No. They're fully functional. No, they got rated.
There's a couple of like serial numbers I need.
Well, they actually got rated about, I guess.
What, like physically rated their offices?
Yeah. All their servers and all that sort of stuff got confiscated about 2 years ago.
Right.
They were back online in less than a week.
I suppose... anyone who works with the Pirate Bay, half of their friends have their own servers anyway.
Well, yeah, no, it's one of those. They refer to it as the Hydra, right?
Where right.
You cut off one head and two more grow back.
Yeah.
But it's interesting right now because the prosecution representing the music industry and all of those copyright folks are they had 2 years to prepare their trial. And so far, I think we're into the day nine. And all they've displayed is a gross sense of ignorance as to how all this stuff functions. I mean, it's hilarious, actually.
Right.
where, you know, they just... they're basically trying to turn it into a political trial based on rhetoric. But that doesn't work in Swedish courts, as I'm finding out. In Swedish courts, because it's in Sweden.
Right.
And they have a completely different take on how their court runs.
Ah, it'd be interesting to learn more about that.
Yeah, ditto. Like I said, I've been following it, and I really like the judge so far, because he's quite straightforward and doesn't like nonsense.
Right, and he's knowledgeable about the subject?
Well, not really, but he doesn't need to be, because he's actually trying to listen to the experts explain the situation from both sides.
Okay, it's up to him to judge the case.
Exactly.
Not the content.
That's right, yeah. And he's doing a good job of that so far. It seems really, really cool. Particularly because, like I said, the prosecution seems to have no idea. Like, they didn't seem to do any research at all about how this technology works at all. Because every time they come up with evidence, it's just completely full of holes, and the defense just pulls it apart.
Right. Well, that reminds me of how clueless feds can be when they bust hackers.
Right.
This one guy was... they tore apart his room.
Right.
Started grabbing everything.
Right.
And they said, "We're here for the source code. Give us the source code."
Right.
You know, as if it was a binder or something.
Right. Yeah. No, it's funny, eh? Well, and particularly because if they were raiding hackers, then it was probably all available somewhere.
Yeah. Well, you know, if one hacker gets raided,
yeah,
it'll only make more people willing to take the risk of putting it up.
Yeah.
To keep it out there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that goes back to one of the first major kind of cases online was with Scientology and the publishing of their kind of secret papers online.
Yeah, well, one reason they were so upset is that they've claimed that their secret documents for the higher level initiation would actually be physically harmful to the people who haven't gone through the thousands of dollars worth of lessons to begin with.
Yeah.
And, well, people could read about the alien conspiracy and the elder gods and so on, and nobody died.
No.
They didn't.
No, yeah. That said, there's some pretty major cracks in the PR of Scientology. So who are they really protecting? But what was interesting in that case is that as soon as they tried to shut it down, it just, you know, sprung up everywhere else. They just found very, very quickly that you can't keep a secret online.
Well, I'm sure among the hacker community, there's a few people who've fallen for Scientology to one extent or another.
Right.
And are recovering.
Yeah. Well, and because in terms of if you read Dianetics, I mean, he was drawing from a good number of different sources of initiatory psycho-spiritual kind
psychodrama.
Of... psychodrama. Yeah, all of those sorts of things. And so, I mean...
So would that include, like, alchemy?
Yes.
Masonic ritual?
All of that. Yeah, especially Masonic and occult rituals and stuff. I mean, L. Ron Hubbard was heavily involved with Jack Parsons.
The American rocket scientist and conjurer and occultist.
Yep. Who Aleister Crowley picked to be his successor.
Too bad Hubbard got in there and messed things up.
Yeah. Well, and you see, that's what's interesting is Hubbard's past is quite an interesting kind of study. because he ran off with Jack Parsons' wife and money. and founded Scientology. Reading through Dianetics, I can see everybody from Crowley and Ouspensky to the Gestalt therapy stuff that was happening.
Probably Jung as well.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I've long known that L. Ron Hubbard was a dangerous lunatic.
Mm-hmm.
But It's only recently that I found out how personally contemptible he was.
Right. Yeah. No, there's some nasty stories about that dude out there. But following through to, you know, modern Scientology is just really quite bizarre. I mean, like I say, I think that there's some really powerful things at work at the base of it that right. He drew from some things that are quite real.
You must have read the essay Naked Scientology by William Burroughs.
Yes, and that's where he says, I wish you'd decide which side he's on.
Yeah. Well, the point about using the E-meter mm-hmm. to erase your N-grams.
Right.
This is imprinted patterns of thought and behavior.
Yeah.
That they go back to your childhood and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they find things. They call it whole track,
right?
Which is past life
mm-hmm.
Problems. And the goal of auditing,
yeah,
is to poke at these things.
Yeah.
When you get a reading on the E-meter, you know you've hit on something sensitive.
Yeah.
And so you work to eliminate that so that it has right. no more power over you.
Right.
And that is very useful to deprogram you from just destructive
yeah.
or neurotic behavior.
Yeah. Well, and in some ways.
And if they would just stop there,
then it would
be useful.
Yeah.
But once you've been deprogrammed.
Yeah. You're then reprogrammed.
You're reprogrammed with something completely, even worse.
Yeah, yeah. No, and that actually, because that really reminds me of some of the Gestalt approaches where, you know, through therapy, you touch sensitive matters within your psyche and, you know, through constant, like that exposure to it, it desensitizes it and relieves those kinds of triggers that happen. And yeah, like I say, very powerful stuff.
Yeah, well, it doesn't just desensitize by exposing mm-hmm. it to it over and over again.
Right.
You know, like poison.
No.
But it makes you aware of where your behavior patterns began.
Yeah.
And so that you stop trying to repeat them, stop trying to fix them, you can just
yeah.
walk away from them.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and that's what I was meaning about being triggered by them on a subconscious basis, right?
Because right.
that's generally what happens is that our conditioning is happening on a completely subconscious level. So we're not aware that these things are being triggered, right? So
So once you bring it up into the conscious mind.
That's right. Yeah. You can like go, that's what's happening.
Right, right.
And then you can make a decision. Then you can actually make a conscious choice about how you're going to react to that thing. Either allow yourself to just go through the same pattern again or start to make shifts and changes and do things a little differently.
Right.
Because it reminds me of Aleister Crowley's early magazine, Equinox. The byline on it was the goal of religion with the method of science.
Right.
And I think in that little phrase is something really important, is that we can utilize these initiatory and spiritual practices but use, you know, kind of the scientific method of feedback in order to evolve those things.
Right.
And that's why his emphasis on keeping a magical diary and those sorts mm-hmm. of things is to create a feedback loop. And once you get that feedback loop going, then you can operate more consciously.
Well, the methods of initiation, I think the problem with Scientology is
yeah.
is it's common to a lot of mystery religions and
yeah.
initiatory practices
yeah.
where you do go through this experience that changes you,
yeah,
but it doesn't change you in a way that you can direct so much as it changes
no.
you in a way that the people who changed you
yes,
can direct,
you.
And that's why they're
yeah.
doing it to you.
Yeah. Well, and that's where I remember reading about that some of the rituals of the Skull and Bones Club.
Oh man, not them again.
Yeah. Which I don't know. Was Obama a member? Because if he's not, then he's one of the rare ones in terms of presidents that, you know, pretty much all the presidents have been members of the Skull and Bones Club.
Yeah. Geez, I don't know. If he's president, he is a child of the elite.
Yeah, well, that's. Yeah.
You know, he's not the common man.
No, no. But he projects that image well, so he's... But what I was going to say is with the Skull and Bones Club, one of their primary rituals is that the initiator is placed naked in a coffin in the middle of the room.
Right.
And all of the higher level people within the organization stand around while they profess their deepest secrets.
Like a skilled, not interrogator, but
yeah.
Well, maybe interrogator is the word.
Yeah.
You know, the term third degree.
Yeah.
When a cop gives you the third degree.
Yeah.
Well, that comes from the initiation into the third degree of masonry.
Right.
Which is quite an ordeal.
Right.
Okay. So a skilled interrogator or, participant in this
ritual.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. That is the right word.
Yeah.
We'll be able to tell from tone of voice and body mm-hmm. language
mm-hmm.
Whether they really are confessing their deepest
right.
things, and they can tell if somebody's holding something back.
Yeah.
Because of the way they look at you.
Yep. And that's part of the reason
why they squirm.
Yeah. Creating that ritual space facilitates that, where the initiator. The interrogator is someone that's gone through this ritual over and over and over again, and so is really able to read those sorts of signs because it's in a
because
very
they've been
controlled
through the same experience,
and it's a controlled environment. It's a tightly controlled environment where
right.
That person is exposed to just all the right stimulus, and so Bill Hicks, rather. Hilarious comedian.
Love him.
Yeah, who unfortunately died, although with his lifestyle, it's not surprising.
Didn't he die after he cleaned up his drug problem?
Yeah, because he had just quit smoking, like mere months before dying. But at any rate, he talks about how he is convinced that all of the high-level kind of neoconservatives within that movement in the U.S. Actually have some of the most perverse things going on because it's the only those that have those types of dire secrets are actually given entry. So they won't let you in the door until they have something on you they can control you with.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, of course, that makes sense.
I know. Like, once you sort of see that picture, it's like, ooh, that's kind of scary. and it sort of moves along the lines of, what was her name? Kathy Jones, I think?
Who was that?
I think that was her name. She was a woman that was a major victim of the MK Ultra experiments.
Is that the Canadian one?
Was she Canadian? No. That was a woman that was at the a victim of Cameron. Cameron, what's his name? The doctor.
Ewan Cameron.
Ewan Cameron. That's
yeah,
it.
Right.
Yeah. But no, this woman was. Now, this is the thing, though, is that her stories are outrageous. Where, she was Ronald Reagan's sex slave and all of these sorts of things.
That is too creepy to contemplate.
I know. My suspicion in this situation is that there was something going on there, but they've messed with her mind so much that she's got, like, these excess stories that basically discredit her. It's almost like they've, kind of messed with her so much that her stories become so outlandish that you can't believe any of it. And which is unfortunate because, like I say, I do think that there's some stuff in there.
Well, that's a great way to discredit someone personally
mm-hmm.
or to discredit conspiracy research in general.
Yep.
I think this is what I think of when I read David Icke.
Right.
Where he... he explains very carefully a lot of stuff that makes sense,
yeah.
a lot of stuff that has been exposed before by other researchers.
Yeah.
It's well documented.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. It's a very persuasive argument.
Right. But then...
Right until he gets up to the top of the pyramid.
Yeah.
Which is reptilian four-dimensional bloodsuckers.
Right. Alien overlords.
And then people won't believe anything he says.
Right. Well, it's interesting because I remember reading a lot of Burroughs, was it The Job, I think? It was one of the books that had a lot of essays in it, rather than one of his novels.
Right.
And just talking about control, and it's almost like there's a part of our own mind that is our own overlord. And it's very easy to mistake that for something separate from yourself. And I think that that's one of the things that Burroughs sort of wrestled with, but then came to terms with.
Right.
Is that, you know, there may be something out there, but the thing that I perceive is just a projection or extension of myself.
Somewhat equivalent to the superego.
In the Freudian sense, yeah.
Yeah.
My suspicion is that the people that perceive this sort of alien overlord, in some ways it's that part of themselves that they're looking at. Then again, I could be wrong. and we may be under the thumb of some invisible alien four-dimensional being out there. I developed my own rather paranoid theory at one point that...
Just one?
Well, yeah, okay. Among many, then. That a part of our own consciousness comes from outside of time. And that it pushes into our bodies to experience time. So that part of ourselves sort of returns to being outside of time once our life is finished. Don't know if that's true or not, but it's an interesting idea.
It is. Sorry to cut you short, I notice we're running short on time.
Yes.
So you have read the poster for Lillian Allen?
Lillian Allen is up tonight at Art Space, which is 379 Aylmer Street, and that show starts at 7 o'clock tonight. Be sure to be there. It looks like it's going to be a good one.
Is there... What's the charge?
It's... I think it's free, yes. As most Art Space events are. Not right. All, but most.
And also, Sunday, tomorrow...
Yes.
From noon until 4 p.m., there's a dub poetry workshop.
Yes.
Which, and admission to that is free.
Yeah.
We encourage anyone who has writings, poetry, or ambition to do something in that field to come on down.
Come on down and check it out. And as another side note, we should also plug Full Metal Booty. We'll be playing Saddler House on
March. That's exciting, yeah.
Yeah, March 12th.
Is it that soon?
It is. Coming up fast.
It's only 2 weeks.
I know. That's why we're starting to plug it now.
Right.
Yes. So, and there's no cover for that one.
Is that what we decided?
Yeah.
We're going to take donations?
We could take donations. And I mean, because the hall itself, they're giving to us in exchange for them running the bar. So, and there will be a bar.
Okay. Well, not for me.
Right. Oh, good for you.
It's been a week.
Nice. Very cool.
You know, we could have a little jar for donations.
Yeah.
I just bought 50 blank CDs today.
Oh, okay.
So I think I'm going to cook some up.
Right, right. We should...
Sell them for, you know, a couple of bucks.
Yeah. And we've been talking about doing something with the 649 project.
We've been talking about doing something with that for years.
Yep. So that might be one of the things that we have on sale.
It's a good idea.
A few 649s in there. And
all different.
Yeah. Yes. This is the beauty of the 649 project, is that it's 49 tracks that six are randomly chosen from. Every album is like a millionaire, right?
Right. I actually did the math on this.
Yeah.
And there's actually enough combinations of tracks available so that every person on Earth could have a unique Full Metal Booty album.
Right.
And most people could have two.
Wow. That's cool. Yes, because it's actually, there's more possibilities than in the 649 lottery. Because the lottery, it's only one order. Whereas with our 649 project, the order can change.
I'd have to redo the math now. Because I did it by 49 factorial minus 43 factorial.
Right. And that's not quite... Yeah, that would be for...
That's about 10 billion.
Right. And that's the odds of winning the jackpot in the 649. Right.
Now if we do permutations instead of just combinations...
Permutations, that's right.
That's going to be... Unfathomable.
Yep.
Unfathomable.
Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
So, I mean, I like the project because it really reflects the random nature of the booty itself, where every time we do it, it's different. There is no...
We don't have any songs.
We don't. It's all one. All one song.
Okay.
Or infinite numbers, depending on how you look at it. So, you've got some Lillian Allen...
Queued up and ready
queued
to
up
go.
There. And so we will sign off with that and let you guys hear some Lillian Allen, who will be at ArtSpace tonight. And in the meantime...
we hope to see you there.
Yep. And if not, we will see you next week here on Trent Radio.
Mrs. In the waiting room, a routine checkup, a technician came in, called me by what she made my name. Mrs., Mrs., Mrs. An answer, but knowing it was I, mumbled and made my way in a pace of my own, in a tempo earned from struggle and long places of silences. I no longer engage words or meanings such as mistress, miss, Mrs., miss us. Mistress rhymes with distress. Miss, missed nothing. Mrs., Mrs. merely with word. Miss us ourselves when we answer to words others name us. Mrs., 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 Mrs. Take the time to hold she close and teach her how to hold that beat.
and never lose it. And all around her the war goes on. No peace, peace, peace for the poor. And in the bravery of the others who struggle, she embraces a history of change. Into the new world of understanding, learn the language of survival and resistance. Woman of many hands carries the revolution close to her breast, holds it dear like a newborn child. She knows she must feed and care for it, cleans its bum, tends its misery, with no intention to fashion our flavor of the month. She must guide it to itself, keep its dreams and visions nurtured. Mission to be discovered and fulfilled. Least it stumbles and trips over personal hardships and societal adversity, and becoming delinquent drifts into the malaise of despair, asking only what? From the drums, a revolution from the beat, a revolution from the heart, a revolution with the feet. The rhythm and the heave on the sway of the beat, the rumblings and the tumblings down, to the dreams, to the beat, to the impulse to be free, to the life that spring up in the heat, in the heat, in the pounding dance to be free, to bust open a window, crash upon a door, strip the crust of confinement. Seep truth through cracks, through the routing rhythms of the musical tracks, 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 tracks. The sound of reggae music came on a wave of pata, pata, of deeply rooted internal chitta. On wings of rhythms and melodies gone free, the bass drum, the heart, the bass drum, the heart beat, and the rasta man. Songs of freedom, songs of spirit,
redemption. The revolution formed the drums.